Men are not broken women. Men do not need to act, think, speak, you know, conduct themselves as women do. Women are women. Men are complementary. When you say emotional, when I say opening up and speaking, communicating, embracing the moment, you know, all that, I'm coming from a position of doing all that like a man. So when I tell you something, hey, dude, I have this problem, I have this hurt, I have this pain, I put it there not to complain to you, but because I want you to take some of this weight off of me, and I need you to help me get strong enough to pick it back onto me so I can go fix it. That's what, how men exchange information. I'm telling you my pain because right now it's too heavy for me, or I'm too chaotic and I know I'm gonna mishandle it. So here, hold this for a second. My trusted companion, who I know is strong enough by showing yourself worthy through you doing the same in your own life, then I can kind of get it out of my head. You can say, hey, dude, think about it like this, or you're going to talk to your wife like that, or go engage the person here. Like, let's think about all the angles here, and I'll give it back to me. All right, thank you. Now I can go and perform and execute my task.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guild of Dad show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills, and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts, along with topics and stories that will captivate you and impact your life. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, then thanks for tuning in and listening to the conversations that we have on here. If you've only recently discovered this podcast, then welcome. We now have some 70 plus episodes in the bag for you to check out and listen to. This podcast is for you, the dads that listen. It's you gents that drive me to succeed with Guild of Dads and the conversations that I have on this podcast. Some of you reached out to me to show your appreciation, which spurs me on in becoming the man and dad I want to be, expanding the reach of Guild of Dads in the process. If you want to get involved with the conversation on social media, you can reach out to me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I'm doing quite a bit on Twitter right now. Or also, drop me an email to joe@guildofdads.com. Tell me a bit about you, where you are from, and what challenges you right now to grow. You can also join our rapidly growing free Facebook group. Over in there, you'll find a positive, encouraging community of other dads on life's journey, currently at over 2,300 courageous men from across the world. The Guild of Dads message is resonating, a message of personal growth and brotherhood and celebrating men and dads, along with the far-reaching impact we can have on society. I'm proud to be on this journey with you guys, leading this dad improvement movement. So, what do you get on this podcast? Each week, we deliver content and conversations that will expand what you think is possible for yourself, enabling you to positively impact yourself, all areas of your life, and the lives of those that surround you. We do this by speaking to fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs, and ultra athletes, professors, psychologists, also some ordinary dads like you doing some extraordinary and impactful things. Every episode will give you either actionable resources to take away or a different perspective on a particular topic. These conversations are important and necessary because the world is changing. The role of dads and men is constantly under the spotlight, sometimes even under attack. And my dream is to make Guild of Dads a go-to resource for dads like you who want to make some changes in your life and live lives of vision, action, and meaning. So what's today's episode about? Brotherhood, and specifically digital brotherhood. Right now, we have access to more communication tools than ever, which gives us 24/7 access to all the cool things the digital age has to offer. But it also presents a golden opportunity to link men and dads together like no time ever before, particularly those dads that remember the pre-digital era, meaning we can share our struggles, opportunities, and lift each other up, but also talk about what matters to us right now. And that's what this episode today is all about, the power of digital brotherhood. My guest today is author, veteran, and co-founder of the private men's group, the Fraternity of Excellence, which has helped hundreds of men turn their lives around and continues to do so for many more, Mr. Zach Small. His writing on his blog, The Family Alpha, focuses on masculinity, marriage, and fatherhood, together with ways men can get the absolute best from one another. He also hosts a regular YouTube show, Oak and Rock Fatherhood, on which regular guests appear to talk about everything parenting, leadership, masculinity, and being a dad. And now to my conversation with Zach. Zach, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
It's an absolute pleasure. We've kind of linked up. We've sort of been on each other's kind of peripheries for a little while. I think we, first of all, on Instagram and then over on Twitter, where I've kind of gravitated across towards recently, and I'm having a lot of fun over on there. And so it's kind of, we were just saying before we came on air that it's
it's funny how we kind of link up as people on social media in the kind of dad and man space, and then all of a sudden kind of thrown together and you have these conversations and it's, the sparks begin to fly. So it's a pleasure, man.
It's been fun. You know, you're right. It was IG. I was diving into a lot of your podcasts before I even sent you a message or we spoke. And then you made your way to Twitterland, which is where I've been doing a lot of things. I was like, hey, I know this guy. And then we linked up with a lot of the fatherhood discussions. We had some DMs back and forth. And people think, or I assume people think that everybody's kind of rolling on the same topic of discussion. We're all like sitting and having all these conversations. And for a while, you and I hadn't. And then it's like, once we hit, we're like, oh, dude, yeah, I'm totally aligned with what you're saying. Totally dig where you're going with this. Like, let's go. And a lot of our stories and just a lot of our angles of attack were complementary. You've seen it on almost every space we've done. You know, you and I had our own space. We did the dad Twitter spaces. You know, we've done a lot of things. And it's every time we do it, just solid sparks are flying. So I'm really pumped to be on here to talk to you about this.
Yeah, definitely. We joked about it the other day that some of the other guys on the spaces, when they see us kind of rock up, they must be like, oh, no. What's going to happen here? What's going to happen?
Somebody's doing something.
So you've got your own brotherhood, which is the Fraternity of Excellence, isn't it?
Correct.
And you have got a bit of a story from where you started off and where you've got to this stage where you're galvanizing a group of men to improve themselves and make themselves better and have that accountability and the brotherhood. And be a lot more kind of capable, more deliberate, and really kind of step up as men and dads. Where did all this start for you? You know, what was your kind of background to actually coming into this kind of this space of helping other men and actually really beginning to make developing men and nurturing brotherhood your kind of legacy, if you like?
It's a great question because there's two answers there. There is the formal answer. And the formal answer is I came from a military background. I spent 8 years on active duty in the United States Navy, 2 deployments, 5 of that time was on a ship with sailors, and then 3 was on shore duty with Marines. And so I had a great, great tour there. But that's just a part of the story. Before the military, before that camaraderie and brotherhood, that mission and focus, I was a young man, like all boys. And I was growing up and I was very close to my siblings. And then from there, I played football. I was very close to my team. You know, and then I had my inner circle as teens. We rolled around and I was just very close to my unit. And so I was a very packed animal type person. I was never really a loner. And so to where this began, I always needed people around me. You see, my mother committed suicide when I was 6. Mm-hmm. And my father was in the military. So he was constantly deployed. So he was in and out. And I believe I've done a lot of, you know, looking back and trying to put the pieces together as to why I am the man I am. And I saw a lot of me leaning into my brother and sister. They were twins. And so it was the 3 of us. You know, we got uprooted because my dad was deployed. My mother was no longer there. So we lived with my grandmother. Went to a new place, new friends, new family. So we stuck together. So we were a very tight little ball of siblings. And we went out and we stuck together. That's what we did. We always had each other's back. And that's how we rolled until we started to grow. And then, you know, my brother had his friends. My sister had her friends. I've developed mine. But then everything from there was sports. So I was with my pack at home and then I had my team and I was playing football forever. I love football and I'm talking American football, not soccer. So tackle football pads. And then I did that all the way through high school and I joined the military. And in the military, that's where my head got screwed on straight. You see, I had a lot of emotional issues. My dad and I would butt heads frequently. I was the oldest sibling. So I was the one always challenging him and he was learning with me what it was to raise a son. I was his oldest. So he learned every day as I grew how to raise a kid of that age. And then that was pretty insecure. You know, I doubted myself a lot. I was always confident in me. I knew I was strong, fast, and I could do things, but I was always insecure as to where I fit in the world. Did people like me? Was I a good person? You know, was I doing the right things there? And so that kind of went on all the way through high school. And like I said, when I joined the military, I said, screw it. I'm tired of doubting myself. I'm tired of saying I'm not good enough. I'm tired of all these negative things attached to me. I was like, what if I just tried? Like, what if for once I just tried and gave all I had to something? And dude, in a second, in that moment of making that decision and then living that way through the military, I was locked on. All of the energy that was spraying into the world wildly was heartily just focused with surgical precision. I wanted to be the best at everything. And so I did exceptionally well throughout my time in the military. When I got out though, again, the brotherhood went on. That all went on. And therefore, I found myself in a situation looking around like, where are all the dudes? You know, and during my time in the military, I became a father of two, married, all that. I left because I wanted to be a present father. I didn't want to happen to my kids what happened to me. You know, my dad is a great man, but it's hard to learn from him and get that presence when he's deployed. That's the tempo I would have been living for 20 years. So I got out after 8 to be a present father, but I lost motivated dudes in that process. Something that you've spoken about frequently is every now and then there are some men who stand up and want to go after it, but a lot of men are calm, are passive, or sit back, and they're kind of waiting for life to happen to them instead of seizing it. And I didn't like that. So I was like, you know, I'm going to be the change I want to see. So I'm going to start a blog dedicated to family men. So the Family Alpha came about. And then I wanted to go further. I ran a 31-day campaign called 31 Days to Masculinity. And then I connected with Craig James. And he's like, dude, I understand. I know how to build a membership community. So we kind of merged together. And then that Fraternity of Excellence was born. And then last year, I bought him out to become the sole owner. So now this year, I'm running it for my first year. Just me, my squad, doing the things I want to do, with the entire focus on what it is I started in the military. Bringing men together, connecting, camaraderie, and just having a team that has your back, but holds you to a standard as well. And that's my life condensed.
In terms of, like, we talk about this a lot, how dads and fathers impact how we live our lives. And it seems to me that the more guys I speak to, you know, depending on what their dads were like, they either want to be kind of like the opposite of their dad, or there's certain qualities of their dad that they're like, actually, like, I like those qualities, but I don't like some of these qualities. Or so I think that for a lot of men, as they kind of get older, they begin to kind of actually reflect a bit closer on not just the relationship they had with their dad, but actually the bits of their dad that they want to take on and continue, and the bits that they kind of want to jettison and drop and actually kind of improve. And I think what I've noticed is, to your point, some guys have that awareness and some guys don't. And it's kind of like there is this kind of foregone conclusion that this is the way life is always going to be. So there's no point in trying, or there's no point in doing anything different. And I'm destined to work 9 to 5 till I'm 65 or maybe even 70 these days. And that's going to be the route and the path for my life. But I don't know. I think some guys are beginning to question this a lot more now, but they just don't know where to go with it, because there's so many people around them that who are stuck in that rut, if you like. They just can't get out of that rut. And it takes a big, to use the rut analogy, you know, like when you're on a mountain bike, or you're even on like a dirt bike or a trail bike, and you get in a rut, you have to kind of bunny hop out. It takes effort to bunny hop or try and get out of that rut. Same in a car, you've got to steer out of it and actually make a concerted effort to get out of it. But I think a lot of guys now, they seem to be frightened or scared to do that, because for the, like, crabs in the bucket syndrome, they're worried they're going to get pulled back and pulled down, and people are going to denigrate them or say, no, you can't do that. And is that what you find with some of the guys that you work with, Zach?
You know, there's this, again, I hate giving political answers, but there's two answers there. So the first, I'll address myself. You know, I was acutely aware of kind of my presence, and just my objective self-analysis was happening very early in life. I was constantly looking at, even as a young kid, I was like, my dad believed in corporal punishment. I remember being a child in the middle of getting spanked, and I was like, I'll never spank my kids. And I said it a few times. And as a kid, okay, buddy, you're just saying that because you're a child. I don't spank my kids. You know, there are a lot of things about my dad that I did carry on. There's a lot of things I let go, but I was making these choices as a child. I was like, I don't want a parent like that. I do want a parent like this. I knew I wanted the family. So even I'm talking 7, 8, 9, 10 years old and beyond, thinking about these things. And so there wasn't so much of a, I have to overcome my father as the final boss. I was already shaping myself under his tutelage. You know, or I think that's the right word. You know, as he was bringing me up and rearing me, I was like, oh no, I really love this about him. I don't like that. I'm just going to kind of take a little bit and become my own man. And so I never felt destined to living the life he lived. Now, to your point with other men finding themselves in that rut, here's something that I've been thinking about recently. And I'd actually love to flip it and hear your opinion on it, because again, I love mixing it up with you. So we're pretty much the first generation of fathers with access to social media and having the acumen to understand how to use social media to improve our real life. My dad didn't have that. Your dad didn't have that. We're on the cutting edge of helping these other men learn how to use social media to improve their lives. Our kids are going to have this. They're growing up in this world. Us, we learned, we had the analog world with no electronics, no technology, and now we have this world. I think we have an advantage our parents didn't have, but because our parents are so close to us, they're only one generation up, we think that they should have had all these tools we had, because the internet, well, it was kind of born with them, but they were also on, like, at least my parents were on the tail end. You know, my dad used it for work. My dad used it maybe for entertainment or building something like music and whatnot. But never did he think of, hey, I can connect with other people and improve. And look at us talking right now and how far apart. And this is normal for us. Mm-hmm. It's normal for me to talk to you about my innermost workings as a man. You know, that's weird. That's a new development. And so these other men, I think that they're just caught a little bit in the old school way of thinking, because maybe they did follow their parents to that, where men like you and myself, we said, no, we need to evolve from that and use this to make us better. So in my group, one of the things I constantly stress is the normalization of doing what you and I are doing now, which is not normal. And so I was wondering, with your squad and all the guys in Guild of Dads on through the Facebook group and then your community, if you were seeing the same thing, because that's an interesting little dynamic there. Are you able to use the tool instead of be the tool used by social media?
Yeah, and I think that you're right. We're the last kind of generation to kind of straddle the digital and analog age. We've got one foot in the past and one foot in the present, sort of thing. And I think that has its benefits and drawbacks. The drawbacks are that there is information overload and people, there's too much information and people don't know what of it's good information, what of it's not good information. The good side of that is, like you say, you can connect. And one of the things that one of the kind of myths around men, if you like, is that men don't talk. And this is one of the, it's put forward as a criticism by certain elements of society right now. And sometimes it is social reconstructionist, sometimes it's feminist. This is the typical thing that's leveled at men, is that they don't talk. I know that in my community, men do talk. And when one of them starts to talk, then another one will start to talk. And if it's a particular topic that is hits home with them, it could be blended families, it could be having a special needs kid, it could be that they're going through a separation with their wife. It could be a number of different things, but that all of a sudden, that once one guy says, okay, I'm going through this difficult thing, another one, two, three, four, five, however many guys will jump in and say, yeah, I've been through that thing. I get where you're coming from. I get where you're going through, what you're going through. This is what helped for me. It might help for you or not. Here's some resources and stuff. I think men have a naturally, I think communities and brotherhoods of men, and I think men working together plays into men's natural instinct to want to fix stuff. Like we always want to fix stuff. And that's one of the things that ends up with us in hot water with our wives sometimes, because they don't always want us to fix stuff, but we put our fixer hat on and we're like, yeah, we're going to fix it. But I think men in brotherhoods and teams and the camaraderie, it plays into our natural ability to want to fix stuff, and not fix people necessarily, but actually to say, like someone asked me before about, like one of the things that I think causes a man pain more than anything else, and this is even almost as much as seeing his family or his children or his wife in pain, is seeing another man in pain. And if you've ever had a phone call, or if you've had a message from someone who's in a dark, dark place, you know, I've got like messenger messages. From people in the Facebook group before I've gone to bed at night, and I've sort of wondered whether or not I'm going to get a messenger message from a wife the next day to say the husband's taking their own life, you know. And whilst it's not my responsibility, you know, I'd be a hard, harsh, you know, heartless bastard if I didn't give a shit about that, you know, just on a purely human, masculine man level, to not be concerned about that, you know? And yeah, I'm waffling a little bit, but this is why
I completely understand, you know, and the hardest thing about that too. And I've been in that spot, and you know, what's extremely difficult, and people don't see this unless you're on the creator side. You're trying to bring this change. You're trying to bring this good in the world. And it's like, somebody can see it, but they think they can't attain it. And they send a message that's basically, you're not sure. Like, hey, like, I'm not 100% that you're okay, but you've got that in your head. You can't take responsibility for everyone. But here's the part that really trips me out is when that happens. And then I go and I'm playing with my child, or I'm out with the kids and I'm there with them. And I'm like, man, this is, we're doing such a good thing, but there's so much pain in the world. You know, these people are hurting. And so I'm here having a great time, living my best life. My wife will come over, give me a kiss, and I give her a kiss, but she doesn't realize in the back of my head, there's 15, 20 names of people I'm worried about. And I'm thinking, I'm like, I really hope these guys make it, you know, like they're almost there. They made it far enough to share their hurt, but are they making it far enough to share that they're also the solution to that hurt? You know, they're the antidote to the poison that's seeping into them. And that is something that I wouldn't say struggle with. I don't struggle with this, but it's a constant. I think there's a term for it where social workers who work with kids, they get a certain fatigue. I can't think of what it's called, but basically they take on the burden of all the people they're trying to help, because similar to cops or anything like that, sometimes we get the messages, Joe, you saved my life, man. Your podcast literally pointed me in the right direction. It helped me so much. I, Zachary Small, to you, have said, dude, your insights have helped me quite a bit in my life. Those are great things. That should fill you with great fuel. It does for me. But also the flip side, you have to carry that burden. Hey, man, I'm hurting really bad, and I'm listening, I'm hearing what you're saying, but it's not working. And I don't know if there's anything that will work for me. And you're just like, oh my God, dude, of course it will. We'll find something. You just got to keep showing up. You just have to walk through this. You're in a really dark, tough spot. But if you keep walking, you will find your way out. But will you have the strength to take that next step, and then that next step? And that's what concerns me. And it's just a part of the job, if you will. It's just a part of being a man. You know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. Well, if we're going to be the men to put our names and faces here, if we're going to put ourselves out and grow our message and do these great things and share our brand with the world, we too have to accept that our decisions aren't always going to be able to save everyone. We're going to say our best damn speech we can, and we're still going to miss them. And that sucks. Those are the ones that stay with you. You helped 1,000, but you lost 2, and you're thinking about those 2, because that's what men do. We are fixers. And the problem with like you're saying with wives, they're talkers. They're more emotional. We're logical. So if my wife's telling me I've got this problem, now I know she just wants to talk. Early in the marriage, though, I was like, oh, I can fix that. I can fix that. I can just do this. She's like, you're not hearing me. I'm like, no, I heard you. Here's the answer to your problem. And she didn't want, that would make it worse. You don't want an answer. You just want to talk to me. Okay. Now I'm like, I hear you. If you want something, let me know. But I hear you, and you can just talk and whatever. I'll listen.
Yeah. And then you're kind of fidgeting in your seat, like, I do want to fix this. I really want to fix this.
And you have this, you get it.
It's like these two little devils sitting in your mind on your shoulders, like, fix it. No, don't fix it. Fix it. No, don't fix it. You're just kind of like going through these motions and whatever. But yeah, no, it's a tricky thing to do that. And I think and one of the things I think that's like, I struggle with a lot of the kind of helpless, hapless man mentality. That kind of pervades these days, and we've exchanged messages on this in the past, and actually in the last week or so over a conversation that we were listening to, I know, having experienced it myself, I know what it is to be in a really dark place. I know that, and I think any guy that's been in that place can relate to someone else that's been in that place. So I get that. What I think I'm really keen on, and we spoke about this when I spoke on your when I spoke on Oak and Rock Fatherhood recently, was this notion of transforming your relationship with thought, feeling, and emotion. And what kind of worries me about a lot of the kind of men information at the moment is it's keeping guys in this helpless, hapless space rather than actually saying, okay, right, this isn't going to last forever. I'm going to help you and give you the tools, resources, and information and knowledge so that you can begin to notice when you're not so great, and you can begin to notice your self-care. You've got guys you can reach out to, and you begin to kind of, you know, put life back together again. And I sometimes worry with the with the kind of conversations around how men should be right now, that it's kind of keeping men and guys down rather than actually elevating them and lifting them up and empowering them. And empower, I don't like the word empowerment, but it's a word that I'm using more and more often now, because just because people understand it, man empowerment, dad empowerment is a good thing. But people still, you know, people still don't like that word. They don't like the word leadership. They don't like the word patriarch, because it just has so much negative connotations in this current day and age. So, and I know it's something you come across as well. So,
no, we live in a time where everybody's looking for a reason to divide. And again, this is really, you know, as the guest on your show, I mean, I understand the position I'm in, but I'm just going to say it. This is what drives me to your work. You've always been very objective. And I'm talking like years ago. I was diving onto what it is you were doing. And you would just say, well, here's the thing. It's not necessarily what I would do, but here's what you could do. And you support people in their individual approach to their life. You empower them to do what they want from life. And you never said, well, here's what I did and here's what you should do. It's always, you own what you do. And I take a very similar approach. If you want to be a playboy, go be a playboy. If you want to start a family, start a family. I'm here doing my thing. And what I'm choosing to do is share some of the universal lessons, you know, ideas, tricks, tips that you can do to apply to your life as a man, because it is universal for men. You know, certain things, being physically strong, universally sound. Family men, all men should be physically strong. All men should be emotionally controlled. All men should be hard in certain areas. That's the compliment and that yin yang to women. And, you know, I see you do the same. It's like, hey, you do your thing your way. You want to be a vegetarian? Be a vegetarian. Want to be carnivore? Be a carnivore. But don't make your food your identity. And then swap that with their workouts, swap that with just their life goals. You know, I try to help these men connect. And in a world where people do want them divided, you do see a lot of conflict. People have twisted your words. I've seen it. You've had some of the pitchforks come out for saying something like, you know, your child should not be fat. You know, you should try to help your child maintain a healthy weight. It'll help them in life. And people are like, who are you to judge? I'm the man saying the truth. That's who I am. I'm the one saying the thing that might hurt your feelings in an effort to help you actually elevate in life. And your angle on that is, it's a great example for all of us to follow. It's one that I try to follow in all of my dealings. I want these men to win. I want all men to win. But if these men aren't willing to accept that maybe not everybody is a winner, we'll help them be a winner until they can get away from this mindset that, well, life is supposed to just give them the success. They don't have to work and earn it. You know, there's a lot of things out there that are keeping men down intentionally. And kind of a closing point on that is, in our consumer society, people want to just be fed what it is they need. And some don't understand, and you've shared this from stories of your youth to things you've had to face as an adult, you're not going to be given everything. You've got to go out and find the things that you need in your life. I have to go out and find these things. Society is not going to offer me. They're not going to write me a check. They're not going to give me the wife. They're not going to give me the values of my life. I've got to build these. I've got to find these. And for my group, you know, within the Fraternity of Excellence, that is one of the greatest strengths. We have made it a point to, what do you want, man? Like, what do you want in life? And we find that out by getting to know the men, and then we help them go out and get it. We're not waiting for anything. We're aggressive. We're attackers. We're going forward. Saying that word attack on your podcast, people are like, oh, that's not a good word. That's one of those words you're not allowed to say. But no, you should attack life aggressively. Go take what you want. You know, I shared earlier with you, I had surgery yesterday. I'm in a pretty uncomfortable position right now speaking to you. This is so important to me that I embody all the values I tell people to share. Hey, if you're hurt, push through. I'm not hurting myself right now. I'm not setting myself back. I'm just uncomfortable. But I'm pushing through because this is so important to me. How many men can't go outside because it's a little cold to play catch with their kid? Face that discomfort. Be a little uncomfortable. You'll find yourself achieving so much more when you're outside that little box. Something that we've spoken about quite a bit. Go be uncomfortable. Find comfort in the discomfort. You do it well. But again, we have to overcome the pushback we get when people do say, well, you're not allowed to say those words.
Yeah, it's because the thing is you, to what you said about point you made about the messenger, people shoot the messenger now. So it's not actually the message, it's the messenger. And one of the things that I've spoken about quite a bit on this podcast is people don't like, so we all have a man in the mirror. It's a guy that we look in the mirror and we're like, actually, this is the man I could be, this is the man I should be, and this is the man I want to be. Problem is, is when you hold up that mirror to someone else's soul, they shoot the messenger. So they end up shooting you because they don't like the reflection you're holding up to them in front of them, because it's warts and all, and it shows up all their fears or insecurities and all the things that they don't like about themselves. And this is kind of what really does happen these days in terms of why people get kind of quite so triggered about this stuff. And it is difficult. I stuck a Twitter post, but one of the big things, as you know, for me is meaning and purpose, and massively influenced by Viktor Frankl and taking apart this whole notion of meaning. And I think one of the sad things about life for a lot of guys now is that they've got all the things they want, like material things they want. So they've got the house, they've got the car, they can go on holidays, you know, they can order food, they can order out stuff off Amazon, and it can turn up, you know, the next day. But there's this kind of nagging emptiness that sits, you know, down where their solar plexus is, that they can't articulate, they can't say what it is. And it's because life is meaningless. They've got all the things they want, but there's nothing that kind of is really firing them up, because there's nothing that's that difficult or that taxing or that uncomfortable that it's actually significant to them. Because when you do difficult stuff, as you know, when you take on stuff that you think is impossible, it inevitably is going to make you go on a journey. And that journey is where the kind of meaning in life comes, not in the actual achieving things. It's the experience and the growth and the turmoil and the sleepless nights and the if it's an athletic thing, training in the rain and snow. That's what gives the thing meaning. It's not the actual doing of the end result. It's the actual what you go through getting to that point. And I think what's sad is that guys' lives are passing them by now, because they're just not doing things that, I'm not saying that you have to go and smash your head against a brick wall every day to have meaning in your life, but just to have something that's, I think I call it finding your edge. So you're taking yourself to the edge of what's possible for you, maybe not going so far past it that you burn out, but certainly nudging that edge. And I was talking to someone about it the other day about burnout, and we were saying about how, like, when you're doing difficult things, you can burn out quite easily, and you can stray into burnout. And I'm like, but the problem is you can only find your edge. You can only work out where your edge is when you drift slightly into burnout, and you can only realize where you're too far back from the edge if you're not being taxed at all. Like, you know, everything's easy, and people listening to this will think, well, what does he mean by that? I mean, it could be a business, or it could be something physical that you're training for or whatever, but you know when you've gone a little bit too far, and you need to dial it just back enough that you're growing, but that you're not burning out. And it's almost like an invisible line that you get to, and it's difficult to articulate, Zach, but I'm sure you can relate to it.
It's invisible, but when you fall on your face, you found it. You know, you'll know where that line is when you hit it. And again, that's, you only know. And this is one of the things I really press guys on. I'm doing my best. And I'm like, dude, do you really think you're doing your best? Or have you forgotten what it means to give your all to something? And 9.9 times out of 10, they're not giving their best to life. They're not giving their best to their family. They're not giving their best to themselves. They're giving an amount and they think it's their best because anything past that is a little uncomfortable. They don't want to do it. Well, this is my best. No, dude. And then I'll work with them. I'll talk to them. I'll ask them some questions. They'll go out and do that. And they're like, dude, I was capable of so much more. I was capable of so much more presence. I was capable of so much more love. I was capable of so much more leadership. And then they start to see kind of what it is I'm saying. People aren't going to understand what you're saying right now until they challenge themselves and find that line. What's he talking about? The line, I push so hard. I work and then I come home and I play with the kids. Can you do more? Can you work and be your best at work and then come home and on the commute home, center yourself, maybe turn the radio off and totally find peace? So when you walk in the door, you're all the way back to 100 and not stressed out. Or in another situation, listening to an audiobook instead of consuming random, you know, talk radio to educate yourself. Or a third, and this is what I mean, you choose your path, listening to the radio up all the way, windows down, rocking out, having a great time, pulling into your driveway, work is gone. Now it's family time and you're hyped and you're like, let's go, kids. And you do your thing. Each of those paths work. Oftentimes men choose none of them. They go to work and then they're so pissed off about work on the way home. They don't know what they're listening to. And they walk in the door drained from work. And so Monday through Friday, all their kids see is that drained man. That's all they see. Like, oh, I'm doing my best.
And then slump down in the front of the,
and then they're snapping TV their like fingers. That. Where's my beer? And then let's watch some TV. And they're like, oh, my dad's just a relaxed man. When I grow up to be an adult, I'm going to be relaxed. That's what life is. And that's what we show people. And, you know, to your point on how we have one foot in the electronic world and one foot in the physical world from our youth, we see the importance of going out and doing things. We know how good it feels to have a breeze on your face, to stop and watch the trees changing colors. We're men talking about masculinity. And dude, I love nature. I love animals because I lived in that world where you respected nature. You understood the beauty of it because you're always in it. And that is something that I think men are missing. Is I had a sergeant major my last year when I was stationed in the Navy with the Marine Corps. And he talked about the greatest apple. And we're like, what the hell are you talking about? The greatest apple. So we're all going on a death march, pretty much. We threw an apple in our pack. We had a camelback, and that's all we had. And he just marched us. I don't know if it was 10, 15 miles. It was hot. It was horrible. But whatever. Just march, march, march. Keep up. I was on the front because I was in the Navy. And all they did, it was like 100 Marine instructors. And there were like 3 Navy guys. And so I was like, I'm going to kick all of your asses. I'm going to set the example. They went, oh, the Navy. So I'd always try to outwork them out, whatever. And we get there. We get to this big ring, and he sits us all out. We're smoked, dude. Muscles hurt. Steam's coming off us. And he said, grab the apple. Yes, Sergeant Major. Eat your apple. That first bite, you were like, oh my God, this is the greatest apple ever. Because we were starving, man. We were hot. We were hungry. We got to have an apple. And that apple was the best apple. He's like, see, if I let you eat that before, it would have just been an apple. But when you worked for something and then you get that prize, it means everything to you. So stop letting all these distractions keep you from appreciating what it is you have. Every apple that you have should be the greatest apple. And if you don't have that that sort of appreciation for the things in your life, you have too much of it. You no longer appreciate it. It's just an expectation. And you know, for us, we grew up without the ability to do this.
Gents, I'm going to jump into the conversation here very quickly. You've probably heard me mention that putting out a regular podcast involves a substantial investment of both time and money to make it happen. Guild of Dads isn't sponsored, and I'm 100% self-funded. So I've recently set up a service called Ko-Fi, which means if you like and appreciate what I'm doing with the Guild of Dads podcast and Facebook group, or even if you want to follow me on social media, then you can buy me a coffee to say thanks and support my work. Just head on over to guildofdads.com and you'll see a small coffee cup at the bottom left-hand side of the screen entitled Donate. You can also follow me on there, so I'll be posting updates and some other cool stuff just to let you know what I'm up to. Any of you guys helping to support the podcast and group by donating will get a shout out on both platforms as my thanks to you for getting behind what I'm doing. If you ever wonder how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on this show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives and transform into the men and dads they always wanted to be. So you'll be in amazing company. And now back to today's conversation.
My kids will never have that feeling. I cannot instill it in any way. They were born into this electronic world. I'm teaching them to use social media and electronics for good, of course, but they'll never know a world without it. They were born into a world with smartphones and all that. When I sit here and talk to you, it still blows my mind, man. The fact that we can do this, because there was a time where I had to dial in an 800 number on a card to go international to talk to you. And I'd have like 30 minutes before they charged me an arm and a leg. I remember that. I remember the phones on the wall and you call a girl and their dad picks up and you're like, oh no, hey, may I talk to Jackie? Like, it was the worst thing in the world if a dad picked up.
Yeah. And then one of your brothers or sisters pick up the phone upstairs and you can hear them.
And then they're listening in.
And you're like, and then you can hear that, like, where it clicks, where they're listening in, and you're like, And you're like, I'm on the phone. And then you're like, put the phone down. And then you can still hear them listening. And then
I can hear you breathing.
Yeah. And then you're on the phone to your girlfriend, you can hear them going, yeah, love you. Like that. And you're just like, oh God, just put the phone down where you like. But I know what you mean.
It's true, man.
I know what you mean though, because like I was like to me, it still blows my mind that like, you know, I grew up in the 80s. We're watching TJ Hooker, or we're watching Magnum, or we're watching something like Cheers or something that's on the TV from the States. A lot of American sitcoms over here in the 80s and 90s. We won't mention Baywatch. That's another discussion completely. But it's mad to actually be speaking to someone from a country that seemed like a long, long, long way away. But I think that I like that you mentioned that kind of Apple analogy, because like when my dad passed away, I remember this was in February time. So it'd be seven years this Feb. And I remember sitting in this hospital room and looking out at this kind of bare tree outside the hospital room window. And it seems like a random thing, but I remember sitting there thinking, you know, he was kind of, I can't remember if he was laying towards the window or not, but that could be the last tree he possibly sees. And then you sort of think to yourself, hang on a minute, he was probably walking along, you know, with, like you say, the cold on his face or whatever, a couple of days beforehand, not thinking that he was going to be in this hospital bed. And that always sort of stays with me, that thought, because none of us ever know what is going to happen tomorrow or the next week, or, you know, life is so unpredictable that we hurry through life and we hurry through the experiences of life, not really thinking about this too much. And, you know, I'd been at this screen for a few hours today, and I went out at lunchtime to take the dog for a walk, and it was raining, but it was kind of like that kind of fine sort of warm rain. And I thought, and I sort of paused for a minute, and I just shut my eyes, and I felt the kind of the breeze on my face and the rain on my face. And I thought, and as I walked up the street, I tweeted about this actually today, and I walked up the street, and I was like, and that thought went into my head again about, you know, I could be gone tomorrow, and this might be the last walk with my dog that I ever had. And that's quite a sobering thing to think. It's quite deep for a podcast. But my point is there's so many different experiences in life like this that we just think life's going to last forever and this is going to go on to infinity. But it could be the last time you play football with your kid in the garden. It could be the last time you drive your car to work. And it sounds depressing, but it's also a very sobering thought as well.
You know, and I would say conversations like that need to be had more frequently. There is a sort of morbid nature to it. You know, you're talking about not seeing your loved ones, not seeing your children, not seeing your dog, not seeing your spouse, you know, not seeing that tree again. These are not great thoughts people want to have. But again, as men, how can we appreciate that apple? How can you appreciate the time with that dog unless you're aware that there might be a time without that dog? You know, on July 15th of this year, I was rear-ended by a woman. I'm going to try to get through this. This is going to be deep. She hit the back of my truck. I was dead stopped. We're on the highway. She's doing like 80. My truck slams the guardrail, launches me to the middle. I had seen, so the fast lane all the way to the left was dead stop. The middle lane and the right lane, they were flying. They had no traffic. There was something in front of us. I got thrown in front of a logging truck, big ass truck. I had seen it earlier when I had driven by it, and I knew it was coming on me. Dude, when they say time slows down and they say near-death experiences, I'm going to share a real one with you. And this is real. My truck flipped over, things bounced around, and I knew that truck was coming. I just bowed my head. I saw my daughter's face looking at me. It was like black and white, just looking at me and smiling. I saw my son's face. It's like he looked up at me and smiled. And I saw my wife's face, and she kind of just looked at me and smiled. And I accepted my death in that moment, because I knew that truck and I could hear it rumbling, skidding, these cars flying all around me. I just let my breath out and I was like, this is where I die. This is it. That was what, 6 months ago, this happened. I just bowed my head and I was like, this is it. And I heard it stop. I breathed out. I'm like, all right, they didn't hit me. I guess I made it. I got up, I triaged myself, and then I hopped out of the truck and I saw the lady's car jacked up. I think I screamed in an obscenity just to get it out of my system. And then I walked over and I helped triage her. I make sure she was okay. I got her out. She was flipping out. You know, there's a lot of steam. I thought some smoke. So we got that all taken care of, got the car turned off. This woman had just almost killed me. And I pulled her out. I got her, make sure she's okay. There's no fire. Got her away from the vehicle. She had hurt her leg, got her the guardrail, walked away, helped all these other dudes make sure my truck was good. Went back to her and she was sobbing. I just gave her a big hug, man. I held her close and let her know, like, hey, I'm good. You're good. These cars can be replaced. Unfortunately, hers was smashed to pieces. Mine was also totaled, but we were good, you know? And to say what you just said about your last time with the walk, last time with everything, I would have died on that highway in Tennessee without a regret, outside of wishing I just had more time. I've told my family how much I love them before I left. I've told my wife, I've had those uncomfortable conversations that are positive. Hey guys, I'm so proud of you for all you've done. A lot of parents think they're proud of their kids, or they'll literally think it, but they'll never say it. They just think the kids should know. I say these things, man. And so in that moment, I had a long time to sit in the side of a highway and think. And I was like, you know, all of those talks, all of those things of doing what they say men don't do, of opening up and sharing who I was with my family, with my friends, you know, it's the reason I talk to you the way I talk to you. If this is my last podcast, I want to go out leaving it all on the table. This is me. This is what I stood for. If somebody's going, what's the last thing he said on the Guild of Dads? Go check it out. That dude bared his soul, literally, to the closest he came to death in his entire life, you know, and the lessons I learned there is I was so glad I did life the way I did it. I'm glad I said the things I said. I'm glad I took the time to appreciate sunrises and sunsets, be confrontational with friends to let them know, hey, you're going the wrong direction. You might be pissed off at me, but at least it's going to help you improve. I'm going to say the things that might hurt your feelings, but it's coming from a place of love. I took the time to appreciate all this and to share all this and instill it in my children. So when it is my time, I knew it was coming. So I lived like I was going to die. And to your point on that tree, the walk with the dog, stopping in the rain, dude, if we were side by side and you were walking your dog and you stopped, I'd be like, oh, I get it. Absolutely. Perfect time to stop. Let's soak this moment in because we might not have another one like it. And that's just a huge lesson that you can pass to men is if you live like life is going to be comfortable forever, you're going to get caught in a bad position when it's not comfortable. Like we're seeing now, you know, a lot of men weren't ready for a lot of things happening in the economy. But if you live like you might not make it, if you live like someday, you know, your time is going to run out, you'll find yourself doing and saying things that you have to get off your chest instead of thinking you'll always have it tomorrow. You know, and if unfortunately, many people don't realize this until a loved one passes away and they didn't say how much they love them. They didn't tell them they were proud of them. They didn't say, hey, I really appreciated you in my life. They never said it. And then they're gone and now they can't say it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a special kind of pain that can't be healed. You can write letters and burn them and send them to heaven. You can sit at their graveside, but you'll never be able to sit to them like we are right now and say, hey, man, I appreciate you. Thank you for what you do. It means a lot to me. It helps me be a better man, husband, father, stuff like that. The reason I say that to you is because now anything happens to either of us, you knew where I stood. I knew where you stood. We're good. And I think more men would save themselves the fate of lost opportunities if they just erred on the side of taking action and living like they were going to die.
Yeah. I agree with you on that one, definitely. And I think men are frightened quite often now. And people say to me, "What do you mean? How can men be frightened? How can they be scared?" And I'm like, guys are scared. They're scared to have a relationship with their wives. They're scared to say anything to their boss. They're scared to say anything that's politically incorrect. Men are so scared right now. They're almost scared of their own shadow. And the problem is that all of this stuff, like you just said, all of these things that you want to say, they're all kind of bottled up. They're kind of bottled up inside, like a cork stuck in a bottle. And the problem is that when the cork comes out the top of the bottle, that's when the wheels fall off the wagon, because all this stuff that they've been carrying around with them for all these years gets kind of all of a sudden comes out like this. And it could be in the form of like an argument with a boss, or walking out on a job, or walking out on the family, or something, just the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I think it's having these kind of cathartic conversations and being able to get some of this stuff stuff out, I think is really important. And it enables guys to, I think, dialogue enables guys to, you know, we were talking about a little while back, this notion of men confusing showing emotion with being emotional. And I think the issue we've got now is that guys, because they keep some of this stuff so shoved down inside and don't ever talk about it, what happens is it's inevitably going to come out as emotional because they've not had healthy outlets in order to process emotion. And people listening to this will say, well, what's Joe talking about this? With this, there is quite a big conversation around men's mental health right now, and I alluded to it early on in the conversation tonight about men need to show their emotions, which I don't disagree with, because it's important not to be kind of be a robot, but also men need to learn how to process, understand, notice emotion, and also how to deal with normal human emotions. And I think a lot of the messaging around men right now is you need to be more emotional. Now, that's great, but you don't want to be around a guy that is kind of falling apart all the time. And we all, let's face it, we all are going to have times in our lives where we're falling apart. Zach was almost just falling apart when he was talking about his near-death experience right now.
I kept composure, okay?
But this is a real kind of bugbear for me, because it gets really misinterpreted. And I think some of the people that are commentating on it know that it gets deliberately misinterpreted. And they're kind of like, well, I didn't realize it was going to be misinterpreted like that. Yes, you do know what you're talking about, and you do know it's going to be misinterpreted. And you'd need to make the discriminate between showing emotion and being emotional, because they're two separate things, you know?
I'm really glad you were there. I was almost going to release in a non-professional manner, because I was getting extremely frustrated and I had to vent to somebody. And because you knew what was going on, I was like, all right, that's who I need to talk to right now, because he'll get it. Dude, men are not broken women. Men do not need to act, think, speak, you know, conduct themselves as women do. Women are women. Men are complementary. When you say emotional, when I say opening up and speaking, communicating, embracing the moment, you know, all that, I'm coming from a position of doing all that like a man. So when I tell you something, hey, dude, I have this problem, I have this hurt, I have this pain, I put it there not to complain to you, but because I want you to take some of this weight off of me, and I need you to help me get strong enough to pick it back onto me so I can go fix it. That's how men exchange information. I'm telling you my pain because right now it's too heavy for me, or I'm too chaotic and I know I'm gonna mishandle it. So here, hold this for a second. My trusted companion, who I know is strong enough by showing yourself worthy through you doing the same in your own life, then I can kind of get out of my head. You can say, hey, dude, think about it like this, or you're going to talk to your wife like that, or go engage the person here. Like, let's think about all the angles here, and I'll give it back to me. All right, thank you. Now I can go and perform and execute my task. You know, I do not tolerate complaining in FOE or with my friends. You can say, hey, the world is all screwed up. Okay, like, whatever. That's a very surface level comment. It's dismissive. Go fix it is going to be my response. But if you sit there and say, oh, my finances are so bad and my wife is holding me down and my kids don't let me do anything, whoa, this is all a product of how you perform as a man. Your wife is treating you the way that you are as a man, or saying you are allowing to be treated. Your children don't respect you because you've relegated yourself in their eyes to a position that is not of authority or of mentorship, but rather somebody who's combative. You've made yourself an enemy in your own home. Don't blame other people. When you point with that one finger at them, you got three pointing right back at you. Assess you. You know, there are masculine ways to share your feelings. There are masculine ways to handle your stuff. And a lot of the times, and I was talking about you and I, if we were going on a walk in the rain, whatever, a lot of the times when you're with men, no words are shared. You're kind of just walking and soaking it in, and you're getting through the thing. And if you're going to have a talk, like a deep talk, sometimes it's with a cigar across the table from each other and a drink. Other times it's you're working on an engine, you're building something, you're hiking and going somewhere. And you're not sitting staring at each other like women. Yet people are telling these men, well, go sit with your buddy, grab some tea, and just stare at each other and talk. Well, no, man. I'm going to think there's something wrong with me for not wanting to do that, because you're telling me that's what men do, and I don't want to do that. Well, because men don't want to do that. most men will open up to a trusted companion if something is happening around them. Mm. Like I said, if they're doing some work, that's obviously the easiest one. But my daughter will sit and just stare at me and talk to me for hours. My son won't say a word. He'll spend time and we'll jive, but bring him outside and throw a baseball with him. Everything comes out because he's doing something. It's natural to men, you know? Yeah. So men, when they open up, need to do it like men. And we were in a situation where I was seeing someone tell men, be more like women, you know, be more like them, do what they're doing. And then you'll be okay with yourself. And I couldn't connect those dots in my head because that's what everyone's telling men to do. Repress yourself, be less aggressive, be less confrontational, be less, you know, machismo. I'm like, no, man, we need more men like silverback gorillas banging their chest, running around. I want to see more of that. That's what men need, to allow themselves the freedom, like I'm doing right now, to speak from the chest about something they love, you know, to say the hard things. Hey, man, I'll talk to you, but I'm going to talk to you the way a man talks to a man. I'm not going to talk to you the way my wife would speak to you. It'd be totally different. The tone, everything, the animation, the energy. Men aren't women, and that's good. We're not equals. We're equivalents. We're different, literally, to the physiological level. And again, to that specific conversation, you know, it was, well, the only difference is societal expectations and standards. And that's completely false. That is 100% verifiably false.
I've interviewed a ton of evolutionary biologists on this podcast.
You've got deep on the evolution side of the house.
Yeah. So, and unequivocally, there is, the evolutionary biologists say that a lot of this stuff that has been purported as things that are socialized things actually are not. You know, they've done studies. You know, I recently interviewed a guy called John Barry, who extensively goes into this topic in his book Perspectives on Male Psychology. And they've done studies in terms of like what toys chimps play, baby chimps and baby monkeys play with, you know, and these are animals that have not, you know, have had next to zero socialization. And they're playing with, the boy monkeys are playing with boy toys, the girl monkeys are gravitating towards girl toys, okay? And these are, you know, animals that have had no socialization, no contact with, you know, the society or being socialized or being in a civilized society like human beings. And they're doing that. So this whole, a lot of the arguments around socialization are very tenuous. And I think you're going to see more evolutionary biologists and experts coming out and actually saying this in the next little while, because some of the arguments have become so tenuous. And to your point, in terms of how women and men interact, again, this comes from hunter-gatherer times, I believe, that men would go out because they were out hunting for hours on end. They were used to conversing side by side, doing an activity, going for a run, going for a walk, playing golf, going fishing, playing football, playing baseball, you know, whatever they're going to be doing, they're going to be conversing when they're doing something. So I think this is... I think we're going to see a lot more kind of pushback in terms of these kind of things. But I also interview a lot of high level relationship experts as well. And how this kind of plays out in relationships doesn't always work out that well as well, because there is a certain way in which, not a way in which men should behave in relationships, but certainly in terms of relationship dynamics, we know that if you're kind of cracking up all the time, it's not conducive to building attraction between you and your partner. In fact, it actually, in a lot of cases, is repellent. So it's actually pushing you further and further away. So if you're a guy, you know, again, this comes back to, you know, guys are going to go through difficult times. We know that to be the case. But if that difficult time never finishes and you're always kind of, you know, on your knees and, you know, you struggling all the time, that inevitably over a period of time is going to have a negative impact on your relationship. Should men not have mental health problems? I'm not saying that. Should men not go through difficult times and bereavements and all that kind of stuff? I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that's not a constant state which you can sustain a relationship in. because it just won't, it'll fracture and it'll fall apart, sort of thing. And you sometimes see this quite frequently when guys lose their jobs. They lose their jobs, they give up on life, they kind of bum around in their pajamas, don't shave for days on end, don't go and apply for any jobs because there's no point, because there's no jobs. And there's a, I think there was a Les Brown story where he talks about this, where two guys, one guy lost his job and he went out, you know, sending out his resume every single day and going for job interviews, and eventually got a job. The other guy was like, oh, I'm going to give up, I'm not going to look, and there's no point and whatever. And the second guy, his wife came home and found him, you know, with the exhaust pipe of his car, and he committed suicide. And that's kind of what I think me and Zach are getting at when we're talking about this kind of helpless, hapless mentality, that it can end up in you ending up taking your own life, because you get into this mindset of there's no point in trying anymore and I'm just going to give up on life, you know?
Well, you're stripped of your power. You're stripped of your power, or at least the perception that you can influence the world around you.
Yeah.
If you're constantly repressing all that you are, if you're constantly saying, well, this is just how it is, this is just who I have to be, I just have to do this thing, you know, you get into such a numb, apathetic existence that you start to question even, hey, why? I'm like, what do I care? You know, it is, life's got to keep, you know, taking a dump on me. Like, I'm never going to get ahead. You know, I'm just a punching bag of the world. And there are other dudes who are like, I'm grabbing the world by the throat. It's coming with me, you know? And you talk about relationships, and honestly, we could do a whole another podcast on this. Maybe I'll get you the Family Alpha and we'll dive on that one, because there's a whole other realm to dive into when it comes to men and women and just interacting and even leading a family. You know, you're absolutely correct. Men will watch movies like Rocky, Rambo, Bloodsport, like a lot of these real masculine movies, and they see themselves as the hero. They watch 300, like I'm like Leonidas. The cognitive dissonance which occurs, though, because it's like, dude, when's the last time you were in a gym? And I'm not talking about in your buddy's garage whose name is Jim. I'm saying in an actual weightlifting arena where you're doing some work. Well, I'll just pick up the dude. You haven't thrown a punch in years. You haven't lifted weight in years. It's like that fire is still inside you. You see it and you want to relate to it, but you're not living it. You know, and if you're not going to embody the values, you can't espouse them. You know, I always say, if you're not going to live it, you can't give it. You can't demand respect from your wife when you don't respect yourself. You can't say, well, I want a wife who wants to be sexually attractive and she wants to support my mission in life and she's going to stay beautiful and help me raise these kids. And then every time you come home, you're crying like a baby because your boss was mean. You know, what woman's going to say, well, I submit to that. That's my king, who's always sad and comfortable and watched, like you said, sitting back with his hands up, you know, drinking his beer, watching Netflix because he had to work at the factory that day. No, man, a king understands that his domain is that castle is his domain. He goes to work to make money, and that's where it ends. That job is money. He comes home and now he's leading, speaking from the chest, connecting with his family, treating his wife like a woman and not his mother, or, you know, just a buddy of his. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier with men not really having this outlet. They're not using technology to connect because they still don't know how to harness it. And that's the strength. And I think that's what you're bringing in, a great kind of, we've hit a few points in this conversation. I connect with men. I have a lot of friends, so I can vent to you and you can help me, like, hey, Zach, try this with your marriage. Like, oh, shoot, that's cool. I will. I don't tell Jackie, hey, I spoke to Joe and he gave me good advice. I just go and do the advice. And all of a sudden she's like, oh, wow, where'd you learn that? You know, what's that from? That's new. And these guys, they word vomit onto their women. They treat their woman like their wife. Instead of speaking to Joe, they're speaking to their wife, Sarah. And they're going to tell all their feelings and all their things to them. And she's going to be like, you're not my girlfriend, but you're acting like it. So I guess you're my buddy now. I'm supposed to be treating you like a king, and I'm supposed to be supporting you and be submissive and follow your leadership. But we're peers right here. We're gossiping every day. And so how can a woman treat him like a man if he's acting like a woman?
I'm going to friend zone you.
Yeah, that's what happens, dude. And then you're a husband who's in the friend zone. And it's just these guys, you know, it's unfortunate how many stories you hear of men like that second man in your example who choose to just go out because they've been friend zoned. Their wife is their friend. Their kids don't respect them. They see no purpose to live. Where the other dude's like, no, like, I'm not going to be defined by my job. I'll find a new job. I'm a man. Also, you strip everything from me. And maybe this is because we've read Meaning of Life, you know, or Search of Meaning. You know, we've read Viktor Frankl, we've read Knight, Eli, we've read these books, even Jocko, Extreme Ownership. We're reading and learning from these other men who have constantly repeated, like, you own your life. You decide your fate. You know, they say all wars begin in the minds of men. All peace also begin in the mind of men. Every war that's ever been fought was started in a man's head. And if we want to bring peace to that life and connection, it's up here. It's not a car. It's not a new house. It's not fashion. It's nothing you can buy. It's inside you. It's taking your dog for a walk and stopping in the rain and be like, I'm good. You can take everything from me. I'm still here feeling this rain. I don't have all the things I want. I have many goals. I'm sure you have many goals you're thinking of, but in that moment, it didn't matter. In that moment, you were fully in the moment. And what a gift that is to give yourself. We constantly talk about presence, you know, with a CE at the end, not a TS. You know, gifts are awesome, but to have the presence of you being in a moment, dude, that is the point of life. You're there. And so when you take that home and you see your lady, every time you kiss your wife, it's like the first time kissing her. Her smell, all of a sudden her smell comes back to you. You know, I call it the third date rule. You know, the first date, you get to know each other. The second date, you're like, all right, cool. We decided to do this again. You've got to earn the third date. So every single day I'm operating on the second date and I want that third date. So I don't act like Homer Simpson. I don't act like Peter Griffin. You know, if Jackie tries to, I'm going to say bow up, but if she comes at me hot and heavy about something, I'm like, whoa, that's not how we talk to each other. That I don't expect or accept anybody to speak to me like that. Like, cool down, come back when you're ready. Still, after multiple decades together, we started dating in 2003. There is that polarity of like, hey, you stay in your lane, I stay in mine. We come together, but we both have, you know, our boundaries and we keep that. And so we still respect each other. We still laugh. It's still fun. We still enjoy each other. That's possible for life. Men can have it. Every man can have it. Nobody's too late. But what they have to do is the hard part. And that's what you mentioned earlier. They got to show up and do the work. They've got to show up and have that conversation, admit it to another man. And that's hard if you don't have a brotherhood. That's hard if you don't have a group. And due to the times today with isolation, a lot of quarantines, a lot of weird things with groups coming together at all, you know, so the internet has been a great tool. But a lot of men are using this to watch cat videos and not talk about how to improve. They're using it to angrily yell and type and slam their keyboard about the politics that they don't agree with instead of connecting with anyone to try to change the politics. They've stripped themselves of the power to make change in their life. And that's the beginning of the end when you think you're just there to exist.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of power in what you were just saying in terms of like, actually, like we talk about, it's not uncommon for a lot of guys into self-development to actually curate their feed. So they work out what stuff they don't want coming up on their Twitter feed or Facebook or Instagram feed. And they purge it of all the negative stuff and particularly political stuff. And, you know, a lot of guys are watching less and less news and all that kind of thing. But I think in a broader sense, you can begin to curate the feed of your life. So not just the stuff that you're online, but actually, you know, how you go about your life in terms of the influences you have coming into your life and the people that you're hanging out with. And when you begin to kind of curate the feed of your life, I think that was one of the things that changed for me in terms of my life, because like some people will go, oh yeah, you need to cut out these kind of people and whatever. It's just not realistic to do that. You can't just cut out everyone, but you can limit the time you spend with people like that. And you can also inoculate yourself into how much they get under your skin. So you're kind of like, well, this is just that person. I'm not going to talk to them about certain stuff. And I'm just going to let them do their thing, you know, let like kind of water off a duck's back. And I think there is a lot of strength in that notion of kind of curating your life, I think, and just refining who you're in contact with.
To that point, I think the opposite end of the spectrum for many is the real issue. So they'll see like, oh, I don't like that guy. I'm not going to hang out with them. But how many men bite their tongue to where they're drowning their own blood because happy wife, happy life, you know, their friends will say that to them and they just swallow it. And dude, I will never forget. Like, I don't remember. It was a few years ago. I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to keep dancing. I think it's when I dropped the pen name. So maybe 2 years ago, last year, I was like, everybody knows my work. Everybody knows what I stand for. So when they say stuff like, oh, happy wife, happy life, I'm like, no, that's not how it works in my home. And they're like, oh, well, what do you mean? I was like, no, like My existence does not make my wife happy. That's not my purpose in life. And then stupid, or they'll call their kids little shits. Like, no, like, look, you do not speak to my kid like that. I was like, and I think the fact that you call your kids that, do you think that's good for them? I've started openly in person challenging people on these little tropes that I used to just swallow. And so while I agree, there is some people you can cut out and some people you should just mitigate, you know, the least amount of time possible with them. Other people, have fun with them. Say the things you think, say the things you tweet, and it's in person and see how they handle that. I have found that to be incredibly entertaining. If for nothing else, then I'm like, look, I'm already not having a good time, so might as well just stir the pot. So I'll throw that little grenade into the party and see where it goes. And dude, I cannot tell you how many times is the woman who agrees with me while the man's caught stuttering. And it's sad because I'm not trying to like amog the dude. I'm not trying to like, oh, look at me, Mr. Tough Guy. But I'm like, bro, do you really believe what you're saying? Or are you just saying it because politically, like, that's the correct thing to say? Because I don't live in that world. I live in my world. I speak truth, and, you know, not, what is that, truth speak or re-speak or whatever the hell it is. You know, I speak honesty. And so when they come out with this, I'm like, nope, not playing that today.
And then you get, oh, Zach, have you had a drink yet? Can I get you a drink or something? Have you I got you some food from inside. We can talk about it some more.
These guys, when they see it, I'll never forget. Jackie came over and she's like, oh, can I get you guys a drink? Because she's my lady. She loves to take care of all of us. So she came to get us all drinks. And one of my buddies, oh, I got it. And went to jump up. I was like, no, man, she's got it. He's like, oh, she doesn't have to go get that for us. I was like, what is wrong with you? Let her do what she wants to do. I was like, sit down. And he's like, oh, okay. I'm like, bro, you're robbing those who love you and want to support you of their ability to show their kind of love. By taking that from my wife, she wanted to do something to say, hey guys, I see you. I want to take care of you. Thank you for all the work you did today. And he was trying to take that because men do everything. No, man, let your woman do what she does. She has a role too. And don't rob her of that. Our women, they play important roles in our lives. I've never been a part of the He-Man Woman Hater Club. My wife has a great role in raising our children, in my life. You know, people watch the movie 300, back to that. They're like, oh, boys go to a gogi. You know, I think you and I actually had a conversation on this. The boys will go to a gogi. The boys are going to be men. And everybody overlooks all the women went to training too. They had very intense gymnastics, very intense, I think it was treating wounds, cooking food, finding food, building shelter, things like that. Their girls were in school getting their asses kicked too. But nobody wants to focus on that because they're all in this hyper-masculine train. And dude, you can be a masculine man and you're not emasculated by having a strong woman. Jackie she's stronger than half the dudes on Twitter. You know, she's more emotionally controlled. She's more focused and driven and more disciplined than all these dudes who are sitting there slamming their keyboard about how tough they are. But if you showed up at the doorstep, they're little bubbles that you pop them and they'll start crying in front of you. So I think we should cultivate and make sure it's a point that because we're building ourselves up as men, it's never at the expense of those around us. When I build me up, I build you up. When you build yourself up, it builds me up. We build each other by, hey, I'm elevated. Let me bring you with me. All right, you're elevated. Show me what you learned. And then we can help each other that way. Same thing with your spouse. Same thing with your kids. We're not against each other in the family unit. You're together. You're a team against the whole world. And that's how we operate. So it's funny when people try to roll in on us like that dude did. And Jackie's like, nah, I'm going to go get that. And I'm like, dude, you need to stop. Like, know your role in this home. All right.
Do you know what? There's definitely going to be a part two to this, but we could go definitely longer on this. But man, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you this evening, as always. And there's always fireworks, I think, when we get together and wax lyrical on some of this stuff. What is the best way for people to find out about you and what you're doing? Look you up on social media, hit you up with a message or whatever. How can people reach out to you, Mr. Small?
Yeah, I'm most active on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Zach, Z-A-C, small underscore. But the writing is obviously thefamilyalpha.com. And then the community is fraternityofexcellence.com. But Joe, I want to say, man, we had spoken about this before we even started recording. Is once it starts rolling, man, we just riff. And so we could have like a 5-hour podcast and still not cover everything. But I really enjoy it, man. I appreciate you having me on.
I've not even got any notes for this conversation tonight.
So yeah, there will be part 2, 3, 4, 5 coming down. You guys stay tuned. It'll be an active 2022, but thanks for having me on, brother. This has been great.
It's a pleasure. An absolute pleasure. Now you've listened to my podcast before. So you've got a slight insight as to probably the question that I'm going to ask you. Before I let you go, sir, what is it in life that gives you meaning?
That's a good question. I would have to say people. In my life, I love what I do, but I'm a pack animal. It has to be, and I have thought about this. It's people, man. It's the men in the FOE. It's my children. It's my spouse. It's you. This doesn't work by myself. I don't do well alone. I can eat alone. I can do these things alone. I'm going to die alone. Like, but I get that, you know, but I think you know what I'm saying. There's more in this world when you're connected with people than when you're on an island. And, you know, if we talk about what drives me, my life's motto is acta non verba, deeds, not words. I try to show people every day that life can be better if we give it our all. And there's a reason I do what I do. You know, I love people. I love helping. I love improvement. I love watching them grow. And whether you're a family man or you're a single woman, if you're listening to the words I'm saying, you understand that you're in control of your life and what an opportunity and blessing it is to have the privilege to be able to speak here to you about this and maybe impact somebody positively. You know, that's, I will die a happy man. I've already far exceeded what the dent I was going to leave in the world. And, you know, it's just great to see it continue to grow. And so with all the people that I've supported and shared and I've interacted with, my life, it's so much better than I ever thought it could be. I could not have built this.
I love it. I knew you were going to leave me with something to think about on that one. Definitely. Zach, it's been a pleasure. Thanks once again, man. And I wish you the very best.
Thank you to Zach Small for joining me today. As he mentioned, you can check him out on the Fraternity of Excellence, the Family Alpha blog, and he's also over on Twitter and Instagram. We covered a lot today, how to be deliberate as a father, the manner in which dads now have one foot in the digital era, suicide, empowerment, near-death experiences, and appreciating the here and now. We also delved into why men aren't broken women. There was a ton of relatable stuff in here, but the most important takeaway is that when men begin to transform themselves, accept responsibility for their lives, and urge other men to do the same, things change, often very quickly, and we can break out of the autopilot we were living in up until now. What do you think? Do you have times in your life where you pause and reflect on the fact it could all be gone in an instant? Can you relate to seeing other men being helpless and hapless? Perhaps you've been one such guy. Perhaps you're even one guy right now. If you want to link up with me, you can do so on Twitter or Facebook using the handle @GuildofDads. Let me know what resonated with you about this episode. Did I mention that you can now buy me a coffee on my website, guildofdads.com? It's really easy and helps keep the lights on here at Guild of Dads Towers. Just head on over to guildofdads.com, click on the coffee cup button and go for it. Those of you who donate get a shout out on here and in the Facebook group. Now, in order to have a positive impact on the world, we improve ourselves and inspire others. Share this podcast with others so that they may benefit from anything you have found useful or interesting. If you make a point of sharing Guild of Dads with friends and relatives, it means that it can grow, expand, and help many more men just like you. The other thing you can do is leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, which really helps other dads to find the podcast. Right now, the Guild of Dads Facebook group is growing fast, very fast, in fact. If you want to get on board, head over in there and join up today. It's completely free to join. You can get around a group of lively other men talking everything about being a dad and improving themselves as men and dads. Hopefully, you find something insightful in every episode. So share with dads you know. In the meantime, live a life of vision, action, and meaning. Apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.